This is Bob Inyart. You can get great science materials from us, DVDs, debates, books, all from our website, kgov.com, or by calling us 1-800-8-INYART. So here's a list of what you can get. DVDs from Illustra Media that we carry, The Privileged Planet, Unlocking the Mystery of Life, and Darwin's Dilemma. And then there are the two fabulous DVDs from Dr. Carl Werner on Evolution, the Grand Experiment, Living Fossils. You'll want to see those. And then Spike Passaris, formerly with the U.S. Military Space Program, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy. And then there's the BEL debates, Bob Debates an Evolutionist, Dr. Eugenie Scott on DVD, and a book, Does God Exist?, Bob Inyart debates atheist Zaketh, a psychologist. We also have two DVDs on our seminar, Does God Exist?, and then Mount St. Helens, The Explosive Evidence for Catastrophe. We also have our debate on the age of the earth, where I got to debate a mathematician from CU up in Boulder and a geophysicist on this MP3 CD. And finally, my favorite science book, In the Beginning, by Dr. Walt Brown. Just call us at 800-8-INYART, 800-836-9278, or check out our online store in the science department, either at kgov.com or realsciencefriday.com.
You are invited to join us this Sunday morning at Denver Bible Church to worship God and study His Word. At 9:30, Pastor Bob Inyart's verse-by-verse Bible study will help you to gain new understanding of God's Word. The Bible study is followed by a time of fellowship at 10:30, then join our worship team in praise and worship of our Creator God at 10:50, followed by Pastor Inyart's sermon. Denver Bible Church meets at Two Roads School at the corner of Oak and 72nd Streets in Arvada. Join us this Sunday at Denver Bible Church, and bring your Bible.
One warning, there's truth overhead. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob Inyart.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Welcome to 2013, January 1st, 2013, the 150th anniversary of Abraham Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation. In studio to help us talk through this and see what we can learn from this part of American history is Denver Bible Church member Jamie Schofield. Jamie, welcome to Bob Inyart Live.
Hi, Bob. I'm blessed to be here.
Welcome back. It's great to have you back in studio. So, Jamie, this is going to be some show because not only have you brought the Emancipation Proclamation with key excerpts, but you brought the history, the pre-proclamation from 100 days earlier, the two go together, and a front page quote from the Rocky Mountain News on the day the Emancipation took effect. And it's all just stunning, and it's very relevant to the whole pro-life personhood battle.
Yes, I recently got a book that showed and talked about the front pages of many issues of the Rocky Mountain News over the course of its whole history. One of the pages that really stood out to me was the Rocky Mountain News coverage of the Emancipation Proclamation that had been issued on January 1st of that year. They had a very interesting quote about it, which I'll get to later. What I quickly realized was that there were some huge misconceptions about the nature of the Emancipation Proclamation and what it did, what it didn't do, and what its purpose actually was. Because I think most people today completely miss the expressed intended purpose of the Emancipation Proclamation.
And that purpose, I think we could go ahead and we'll have to give a spoiler alert, but we might as well explain what the purpose is in our own words before we actually read the excerpts.
Sure.
So how would you explain it?
Well, I'll preface that by saying that there were actually two halves to this proclamation, and the first half was the preliminary proclamation, which was in September of 1862. It was 100 days prior, and they really can't be separated. They're actually one policy. One is basically stating the deadline, and the other is basically enacting it or activating it in a sense. So the purpose of the Emancipation Proclamation was to give a deadline to the Confederate states, and the message was this.
The states that wanted to secede.
The states that they were, that the Union was at war with, and the message was, stop rebelling against the Union and keep your slaves.
Huh? I thought, what? I thought the Emancipation Proclamation was saying that the slaves are freed. Actually, I know that's not the case, but that's the general perception.
Right.
But what you just said is this Emancipation Proclamation was really a proclamation to the states saying, if you will not continue the fight against the North, against the Union, then you could keep your slaves.
That's correct. At least for the time being. It didn't say anything about making slavery illegal or anything like that.
Right.
But Lincoln, at this time, actually just a couple weeks before the preliminary proclamation, he stated, and I quote, "My paramount object in this struggle is to save the Union and is not either to save or destroy slavery. If I could save the Union without freeing any slave, I would do it."
What? Come on now.
And that is exactly what is reflected in the Emancipation Proclamation.
Yeah. In fact, this comes from a letter of August 22nd, 1862, to Horace Greeley. Abraham Lincoln, the president, begins, "If there be those who would not save the Union, unless they could at the same time save slavery, I do not agree with them. If there be those who would not save the Union, unless they could at the same time destroy slavery, I do not agree with them." And then comes the quote that you stated, "My paramount object in this struggle is to save the Union. It is not either to save or to destroy slavery." And you could imagine this being done in Germany in the 1930s and 40s, with the state of Germany being torn to pieces because of its wickedness and their lust for killing the Jews. And somebody saying, you know, my concern is for the fatherland. That's my concern. If we could save the fatherland and kill all the Jews, fine. If we could save the fatherland and save the Jews, fine. I don't care about the Jews. I care about the fatherland. In fact, there are quotes sort of like that from the time period from others who said, I couldn't care less about all the Negroes in the whole land. All I care about is precious states' rights.
Right. And we even have a quote from someone who has imagined himself as being a judge in that era. I don't know if this will sound familiar, but this gentleman said that some people want to end abortion in all states, and I disagree with them, and some people want to keep abortion legal in all states, and I disagree with them as well. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, it sounds like Antonin Scalia,
exactly,
who's a Republican current U.S. Supreme Court justice, who is supposed to be pro-life, but he's not. At American Right to Life, they've documented, they've offered $10,000 to National Right to Life. If they can name one pro-life justice on the U.S. Supreme Court, just name one, you get $10,000. And here's the quote from Antonin Scalia. And this is at a prestigious forum, the Pew Forum from 2002. "I will strike down Roe v. Wade," he writes. And that's all the Republicans cheer. Yay! "I will strike down Roe v. Wade, but I will also strike down a law that is the opposite of Roe v. Wade. You know, both sides in that debate want the Supreme Court to decide the matter for them. One side wants no state to be able to prohibit abortion, and the other one wants every state to have to prohibit abortion, and they're both wrong."
Right. And so he has a lot in common with Abraham Lincoln, who's stating that a man-made process is more important to him than inalienable God-given right to life and liberty.
Wow. And so this is not a surprise for those who are in the pro-life battle, because we see this all around us. It is this legal positivism and moral relativism that if a black man is going to be enslaved, kidnapped, God said that's a capital crime. You kidnap and enslave someone, capital crime. If Jews are going to be killed, babies dismembered, we have conservative Christian leaders, even like James Dobson at Focus on the Family, saying, well, you have to follow the process. And when a judge like Samuel Alito upheld partial birth abortion in New Jersey, Dr. Dobson said, well, that's exactly what he should do because he's following the law. And we're thinking, huh? I thought Focus on the Family was trying to stop it. They took both sides of the same ruling. They condemned it and then they defended it because they found out this was a Republican judge. And he was following the process.
Right. And the hypocrisy is that would they have criticized Alito if he had ruled in favor of the partial birth abortion ban?
No.
Of course not.
They were filing friend of the court briefs. They were asking the courts to stop partial birth abortion. And then when Alito says, well, the state of New Jersey, the legislature banned this, but I'm going to overturn that ban because, you know, the Supreme Court, I think, said that this should be allowed. And so then they defended him.
Right.
So either way, it's insanity.
The compromised political leader in question can do no wrong. And that's a kind of idol worship.
Could you, before we get to the preliminary proclamation from September 22nd, 1862, could you conclude that section in the letter, Abraham Lincoln's letter to Horace Greeley? This reminds me of the current battle to save unborn children.
Certainly. He went on to say that, and I quote, "What I do about slavery and the colored race, I do because it helps to save the Union. And what I forbear, what I put up with,
what I accept,
I forbear because I do not believe it would help to save the Union. I have here stated my purpose according to my view of official duty, and I intend no modification of my oft-expressed personal wish that all men everywhere could be freed."
Okay, so Lincoln was personally pro-abolition.
Right.
But officially pro-choice.
Right, exactly.
And we hear that all the time, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
We hear alleged conservative politicians saying that, well, I'm personally pro-life. As soon as they say, I'm personally pro-life, that's it. Don't vote for them. They are poison. They are the enemy. Because when they say, I'm personally pro-life, that means that they're officially pro-child killing.
Exactly.
That's what it means. Nobody ever says, well, I'm personally against rape.
No.
Nobody says that. I'm personally against kidnapping.
It begs the question.
Exactly. Yeah, well, what's your official position? I'm not a racist.
Right. We don't elect people to live their personal lives.
No.
We elect them to lead.
Right. Exactly.
Officially.
Exactly. So, Jamie Schofield, we're now back at the preliminary proclamation, September 22nd, 1862. Can you sum it up, the preliminary Emancipation Proclamation? What was its goal?
Certainly. And it's important to know that this is the other half of the proclamation that most people overlook. They really can't be separated, the preliminary and the actual proclamation on January 1st. They're a consistent single policy. Mm. So, in effect, the preliminary proclamation was saying, we'd rather that you kept your slaves and stopped rebelling against the Union. But if you keep rebelling, we will declare that your slaves are free.
Oh.
That was the message of the preliminary proclamation.
Okay, so that if the proclamation had succeeded.
Right.
Now, by its own standard, the proclamation failed. When you came to me a while back and you said, Bob, have you read the Emancipation Proclamation recently? I said, well, not since like the 60s. No, I haven't. Long time ago, like 50 years ago almost. So, no, I haven't. And you said, well, do you remember the part where it says, if any state will lay down their arms, stop fighting the Union, then they could keep their slaves? And I said, well, Jamie, from the pro-life movement, I could predict that that will completely fail. Not one state would take up that offer, because when you say, like, you could say to people, hey, is it okay if you wait 24 hours, then you could have your precious abortion? If you sign this paper, then you could have your precious abortion. Look, if you want to kill the baby, don't do a partial birth abortion. Just give them a poison that kills them. It's not as barbaric. They become enraged. Whenever you bring up people's sin, they become enraged. They don't become more compliant.
Right.
They just become enraged.
Their sin is inviolable. If you trespass one inch into that area, they become enraged, right?
Right.
So, and that's what we see today. You're correct. Your prediction was accurate. Not a single state.
150 years after the fact prediction, but still.
Certainly.
Based on.
Not a single state took them up on that offer. And in fact, all it did was basically infuriate the Confederate states in
further
rebellion.
So by its own standard, the proclamation was a failure.
A complete 100% failure. It had a 0% success rate for its expressed intent and purpose.
Right. Which is predictable. If you knew human nature, that was predictable. Now, Jamie, could you quote for us from Section 10? Because this really crystallizes what's going on in the proclamation.
Sure. In both halves of the Emancipation Proclamation, this policy was fundamentally flawed and immoral. As we've already pointed out, it authorized keeping slaves in bondage, and it actually listed the specific geographical areas, the states, and even the counties in which slaves would remain in bondage. That's
first of all. In fact, in a little bit, I'd like us to read some of those because it drives it home.
And the other compromise was that it ordered slaves, in some cases, to be returned to their masters, runaway slaves.
And you would think, I know Dred Scott was issued, what, about 5 years earlier, and that was such an evil ruling, a grave injustice against humanity. Mm-hmm. And American Right to Life has a tremendous assessment, has a tremendous article on the Dred Scott ruling. Just go to AmericanRightToLife.org/Dred. D-R-E-D, and you'll get right to it. And it's a stunning read. This idea that if a slave ends up in a free state, then you'd think, hey, he's escaped, he's free. But no, the U.S. Supreme Court said, nope, return him to his master. So Abraham Lincoln, in the Emancipation Proclamation, continues that policy.
Right. This section says that, and I quote, "No slave escaping into any state, territory, or the District of Columbia from any other state shall be delivered up," which is to mean
returned.
Returned.
No, to the master.
Unless, and I'm going to paraphrase first because it's kind of legalese, unless the slave owner shows up and gives an oath that, number one, I am the lawful owner of the slave, and number two, I've never borne arms against the Union. He doesn't even have to show evidence.
Whoa.
Just give an oath.
Whoa.
And here's your slave.
So it says, no slave escaping into any territory or D.C., District of Columbia,
or state,
from any other state, shall be returned unless...
unless the person claiming that fugitive shall first make an oath that he is the lawful owner of that person and has not borne arms against the United States in the present rebellion.
Wow.
That's all he has to do. Here's your slave back.
Right. The thought that the Emancipation Proclamation is based on principle, that it's a principle document, that it says blacks are human beings, they are persons, they have the God-given right to life, as the Declaration of Independence said, that we are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness.
Exactly.
And so this is nothing like that. Now, slavery was ended in countries around the world. It didn't only come to an end in America.
No.
So the fact that it eventually ended does not mean, and this is where the abortion regulators get confused, I think. We point out all the immoral things that were done by those who said they were against slavery, how immoral, and how they should have agreed with the abolitionists like William Lloyd Garrison. And they say, yeah, but we ended slavery. We did.
Yeah, pretty late. Compared to most other people.
Pretty late. And after how many were killed? Do you remember in the Civil War?
Over half a million. I think over
600,000. 600,000. The deadliest war percentage-wise. Mm-hmm. What was it? About 2% of the U.S. population was killed. When you compare that to the Vietnam War, every war is tragic, losing innocent lives and soldiers dying. The Vietnam War was like 1/20th of 1% of the population, even though even that was a great tragedy. World War II was something like 1/3 of 1%. But the Civil Wars are the bloodiest.
Because we're on both sides of the war.
France, the only war they ever won was their Civil War. But we lost so many, so devastating, and slavery was ended in nation after nation around the world without a civil war, so that the way we did it, it's wrong to say, well, we can't end abortion because the way they ended slavery was they had a war. That's wrong, because many other countries ended it without a war. And it's wrong to say we got to do it the way they did it because they succeeded. That's wrong also.
Of course. And sometimes, as the old saying goes, even a blind squirrel finds an acorn now and then.
Whoa.
There was abolitionist criticism of the Emancipation Proclamation at the time, which is almost completely glossed over today as well. Mm. Lincoln's Secretary of State actually was an abolitionist, and his name was William Seward, and he criticized this policy by saying, "We show our sympathy with slavery by emancipating slaves where we cannot reach them and holding them in bondage where we can set them free."
Now, this is the Secretary of State.
Right.
So in his opinion has been shared by many at the time by all the abolitionists. Now, the abolitionists were hated by most, especially by the anti-slavery crowd. They hated the abolitionists. We're going to get to the quote you brought in from the Rocky Mountain News in a few minutes, and it shows that they really hated the abolitionists. Seems to me they hated them more than they hated the slave traders. Mm-hmm. That's the way it seems. This Secretary of State expressed a view that has been repeated through the many decades, including today, by people fighting the parallel battle of protecting unborn children from being killed. So he says, look, we're sympathetic with slavery because we're freeing the slaves where we can't reach them. In these states that are fighting against us.
That the Union does not currently control. We're simply declaring them. And that's why I emphasized that earlier. Right. We are declaring them to be free. They're not actually free.
Right. We're saying, so the slaves where we cannot reach them, we're saying they're free. And we are holding these men in bondage where we can set them free. So all the places where they had slaves that were not fighting the Union, Lincoln said, you guys could keep your slaves.
That's right.
Imagine if Lincoln had succeeded. Imagine if all the states agreed, they'd keep their slaves, and they'd stop the fight.
Then it would have delayed abolition, which I believe would have still come about through abolitionist uncompromising principles.
Yeah, but there's no way to predict how long it would have delayed it. But
Certainly. Now
all these states just got from this executive order, we can keep our slaves. And now Congress is going to consider, what are we going to do with an amendment to ban slavery when we just ended the war? We don't want to restart the war. We could have had this crime against humanity for decades longer if this compromise would have succeeded.
That's right. The Emancipation Proclamation on January 1st actually listed the areas in which slaves would remain in bondage, and even down to the counties, because, for example, parts of Louisiana, especially around New Orleans, they had removed themselves from the Confederacy, were not part of the rebellion. Mm-hmm. And they're listed in the proclamation as along with areas of Virginia, which were, ironically, seceding from Virginia. So many counties were seceding from Virginia who was seceding, and they wanted to call themselves West Virginia. That's how West Virginia eventually was born. Mm-hmm. And those counties are listed in the proclamation.
Why don't you give us a sense of some of them? We don't have to read all of them, but the proclamation explicitly authorized slavery to continue in these areas that were not fighting the Union. So why don't you just share some of them with us?
The states that it applied to included Arkansas, Texas, much of Louisiana, except for, and it lists, the parishes of St. Bernard, of Jefferson, St. John, St. Charles, St. James Ascension, Assumption, Terrebonne, LaForge, St. Mary, St. Martin, and Orleans, including the city of New Orleans. Mm.
So, and that, I think, added up to something like 30,000 slaves, which were later freed. The front page of the Rocky Mountain News, this is quite a quote, because the Rocky Mountain News was pro-abortion, you know, this faux conservative voice in Colorado. And it's been a morally bankrupt institution from its inception. But what did they write way back in 1863?
Well, the Rocky Mountain News was covering the recent Emancipation Proclamation, and they basically approved of the fact that it was not an abolitionist policy. They were approving on the front page the fact that it continued to authorize slavery. They criticized abolitionists. The quote is this. They said, the last mail brought scores of Eastern and Western papers with similar recommendations. The voice of the press is almost unanimous in its approval.
In its approval of the proclamation.
Right. That is a pretty correct index of popular opinion, and we may therefore set down that almost the entire loyal states endorse the action of the president.
Okay.
It must be expected that the ultra-abolitionists will kick against it as too conservative, in other words, not going far enough, for their radical views. Let them squirm. Honest Abe has shown that he will be no tool of theirs.
Whoa. So the Rocky Mountain News, the editors, front page, they're so thankful that the abolitionists, and they were just abolitionists, they call them ultra-abolitionists.
Of course,
right?
Extremists.
It's right. Like National Right to Life calling us purists because we want to save every baby, as though it's evil, you know, as though it's evil to want to be pure and to not support the killing of any child.
I always ask them, are you taking the impure position? Right. Is that what you call your position?
Right.
Impure?
So we're the purists. And so the abolitionists, they call them the ultra abolitionists. Cracks me up. People call me an ultra dispensationalist.
Let them squirm, they said.
Dispensationalist. Yeah, it must be expected that the ultra abolitionists will kick against it. And of course they did. They pointed out how corrupt it was. Mm-hmm. As too conservative for their radical views, let them squirm. So they're mocking those who want to save every black man. Because what happens when you advocate for personhood, you make other people feel guilty. But they don't want to admit that guilt. When you admit your guilt, when you are guilty, then God could help you. But when you deny the guilt, you get angry at those exposing the sin. And so that's why the Rocky Mountain News, why are they angry at the people trying to stop slavery? They hate those people.
Of course.
And just like the pro-lifers, the make-believe pro-lifer Republicans hate the personhood movement. They hate it because personhood exposes their sin that they advocate killing many children.
And we cannot let that break our morale. We cannot give up simply because the world talks that way about us.
Yeah. And the Rocky Mountain News has gone defunct. And it's just a symbol of all those who rebel against God. On the ash heap of history, they come to nothing. Jamie Schofield, thank you so much for being in studio.
Glad to be here.
It's a real pleasure and honor. As we're closing out, and for those in the audience, of course, this is January 1st, 2013, 150 years after Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation, and we today are fighting the battle that they were fighting then. Every age has its battle. Every age needs to look to God for His truth, for principles, for courage. And please stand with us as we stand for Him and the innocent.
Amen.
May God bless you.
Now you can subscribe to Bob Enyart's monthly Bible study DVDs. These verse-by-verse Bible study videos are great for family Bible study or even starting your own neighborhood Bible study. Each month, you get 4 or 5 Bible study sessions on 2 DVDs. You can subscribe by calling 1-800-8-ENYART or online at kgovstore.com. That's kgovstore.com.
This is Bob Enyart. You can get great science materials from us, DVDs, debates, books, all from our website, kgov.com, or by calling us 1-800-8-ENYART. So here's a list of what you can get. DVDs from Illustra Media that we carry, The Privileged Planet, Unlocking the Mystery of Life, and Darwin's Dilemma. And then there are the 2 fabulous DVDs from Dr. Carl Werner on Evolution, the Grand Experiment, Living Fossils. You'll want to see those. And then Spike Passaris, formerly with the U.S. Military Space Program, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy. And then there's the BEL debates, Bob Debates an Evolutionist, Dr. Eugenie Scott on DVD, and a book, Does God Exist? Bob Enyart debates atheist Zaketh, a psychologist. We also have 2 DVDs on our seminar, Does God Exist? And then Mount St. Helens, the explosive evidence for catastrophe. We also have our debate on the age of the earth, where I got to debate a mathematician from CU up in Boulder and a geophysicist on this MP3 CD. And finally, my favorite science book, In the Beginning, by Dr. Walt Brown. Just call us at 800-8-ENYART, 800-836-9278, or check out our online store in the science department, either at kgov.com or realsciencefriday.com.